Live from beautiful San Diego, California, by way of my mom's basement, it's the Stacking Benjamin Show. Hey, everybody. I'm not Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug. I am actually Joe, and today I'm taking you and OG on a tour of several interviews from the Big Money Media Conference called FinCon 2016. On today's show, we welcome Pauline Paquin, Dan Macklin, Nick Clements, Jay Fleischman, Jeffrey Troll, Jackie Lamb, Shannon McClay, Grayson Bell, Laron Amrani, Larry Ruff, Nick Clements, and Joshua Sheets. And here we are, two guys who are still amazed that one of us actually left the basement, me and OG. Hey, and a happy Monday to you, everybody. I am Joe Salcihi, Average Joe Money on Twitter. What a strange episode we have today. Not our usual format, but we do have the usual cast of characters here. Across the table from me, it's the one and only other guy, as we call him, OG.
I am sitting here with a smile on my face.
Why is that? Because you're not wearing pants.
No, because you're not wearing
pants. That becomes a whole different podcast. Hey, we normally would talk about our sponsors right here, but guess what? We have interviews coming up with both of our sponsors on top of a bunch of people. Not our sponsors, on top of a bunch of people. And also is a different podcast.
It's a dangling modifier. That's
whole different.
Get it? Yeah,
we're on fire today, man. And you know what's funny? A whole weekend went by, OG, and I don't think my voice improved a smidgen.
Maybe just a little bit.
It still feels better than it did, but anyway. Okay. So StackyBenjamins.com/magnify money and SoFi, spelled S-O-F-I, StackyBenjamins.com/SoFI for both of our sponsors. We're going to talk to both of their peeps here, but this is our annual FinCon episode. I will tell you this, OG, normally we have a very struct. We have two FinCon episodes normally. For those of you that are brand new to the show, FinCon is the Financial Money and Media Expo. It's the place where people that write and talk about finance in the media get together with great media topics, and they talk about how to get the word out better about great media. So everything at FinCon revolves around three different topics. One is creating better stories. The second is then publicizing those stories, because a lot of times they're talking to bloggers or little podcasters like us. And the third is then about profiting, and whether that profiting is from your relationships with sponsors to the relationships that you have with listeners to have a, you know, not just profiting monetarily, I guess is my point.
Growing, you know what I mean? Overall.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. So those are the three points of FinCon. So during that, a lot of people do podcasts. We did a live podcast where we did our same old show, the Match Game show that we had done last year. It turned out, however, that one of the mics was not hot. You could hear it over the speaker. It wasn't being recorded. So,
ooh, bummer.
Yeah, we are going to release that show as a green room episode in the near future, because you can hear most of it, and you can hear, but because it was my microphone, by the way, that was not going, because I was using a wireless.
So nobody's missing anything, basically.
They're not missing. You're not missing. And we should have just played it, because. But so that episode we're going to release as a green room episode, because you can kind of hear, but not everything. It's pretty funny. The show is very funny. It was great. For people that were there live, they had a good time listening to it. By the way, OG, we were outside recording that. I had the San Diego, is it Bay Harbor?
Sure.
San Diego body of water. That
the
was
ocean,
there.
I think.
No, because I was going to tell you.
No, I think it's still ocean.
Right across the water from us was the naval base, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah, Coronado.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good stuff. Anyway,
it's still ocean water.
Yes, yeah, okay. It is ocean water. But it wasn't really the ocean. It was in.
Yeah, I think it's still the ocean. If it's ocean water, it's still.
I think it's inland area. Everybody's like, move on.
Anybody from San Diego can write in and tell Joe that it's kind of still the ocean, just because maybe like a little bay or something. Still ocean.
By that reckoning, then a little stream that works its way down to the ocean is also an ocean.
Yeah, no, that's freshwater. Two different things.
All right. Anyway, so we'd normally have a second FinCon episode, which is also a potpourri of different interviews because I go around and talk to as many people, get as many different voices as possible. This is that episode, OG. So we're going to take people through that. We had time to catch up with some old friends. And actually, what's funny is that I had less time than I thought. So I take my recorder into the expo hall, and there's all these different cool financial companies that are in the expo hall. And I go and I see our old friend, Bill Dwight from FAMZOO over at FAMZOO.com. And if you have children and you don't know much about FAMZOO, Bill's going to tell us a little bit about that because he's been on the show for, I think, at least a year. And Bill, by the way, won the FinTech competition at FinCon last year. So I moseyed on over and talked to Bill. Let's listen to that. I'm here with Bill Dwight from FAMZOO. Bill, you're back.
I am back.
For people that, you've been on the show for a while, people that don't know about FAMZOO, we always talk about you in passing, and I realized as I was literally just passing the booth, because I'm like, everybody knows about him, I thought it's been a while since Bill's been on. So tell people that don't know about FAMZOO what you're all about.
Well, we provide prepaid cards for kids, and if you heard Clark Howard the other day, you'd think that's horrible, but the reality is that that's the environment that our kids are growing up on. They can't exactly stuff cash onto iTunes. And so what we're trying to do is make spending with a prepaid card for a kid sort of as mindful and painful as it is with cash, because that's a reality that they're going into. You know, we basically help parents teach their kids personal finance habits using a collection of prepaid cards where the parent has a funding card and that funds allowances, chores. But it's not always going that way. Like, I bill my kids $20 at the end of every month for their cell phone bill. And so I'm trying to get them to, oh, also, as a parent, I pay my kids an awesome interest rate to encourage them not to spend.
See, this is the thing I think is cool about the product. I mean, I think the debit cards are fine. I think the ability to assign an interest rate to money that's in their account that you're paying to them was mind-blowing for me. And the other thing that I loved was the fact that I can do things like bill them or make sure that they keep track of their budget, you know, or sit down with them in budgeting. So it's really, for me, more of an educational tool than the debit card for me is an add-on feature.
Well, the key thing about the debit card is it puts some responsibility in the kids' hands. Okay. And they get some practice with a card. And the whole thing is, I don't want my kids to think the cards are magic. I want them to know exactly how they work.
They're not magic?
Well, your card might be magic, but mine isn't. And so, like, if they try to buy something and don't have enough balance, I want them to know that. I want them to get a decline and feel the embarrassment of it. Furthermore, if you want to, as a parent, you might charge them an overdraft fee that comes back to your account. Now, we don't charge any overdraft fees. We have no hidden fees. We do charge a monthly fee, you know, because I don't know, I got to pay Chris over here. But, you know, a flat monthly fee for the whole family. But you're running the bank. You're running your own little mini bank. So if you wanted to charge your kid every time that they got a decline because they had insufficient balance, you could ding them a dollar instead of 35 like big banks out there. But you're warming them up. It's training wheels for when they graduate and have, you know, products that are designed for, I guess they're designed for adults, or they're designed to entrap adults. But it's a safer environment for kids.
I had a client back when I was a financial advisor who would pay his kids an allowance, but then he would deduct taxes to make them hate the man. But with you, you guys can make that automatic, where it automatically deducts it and shows the kid that, hey, tax got deducted.
That's right. You can actually split any of the income. And by the way, we're not, you know, big on allowance or big on chores or big on outside jobs. We're big on any of those, whatever works for you. But you can take those income streams, it can split them between buckets. One of those buckets might be a tax bucket. That might be a card that the family uses for going out together. You know, it's for the common good, as it were. But typically the buckets are spend, save, give. And the neat thing about the donation bucket, if you use one, is the kid gets to do the transaction. You know, like they might go online and actually donate the money, and that makes them involved and feel ownership over the donation versus, oh, mom and dad donated for me.
Right,
you know,
that's
just not as compelling. So we're trying to give them that direct experience, but in a safe, sort of moderated environment where the parent knows what's going on.
It's at FAMZOO.com.
That's right. That's where we are.
Thanks for hanging out.
You bet. Good to see you, Joe.
We're going to have a lot of links in our show notes today, but that'll be the first one. FAMZOO.com. Head to our show notes at stackingbenjamins.com. And teaching your kids about money in an age of plastic. I want to ask you about this. We had Clark Howard on last week Clark said, cash, 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 that plastic is the bane of your existence. You really should always carry cash. Bill Dwight says, yeah, I kind of agree, but we live in a cashless society, whether we want to, you know, talk about cash, cash, cash all the time. So why not teach our kids how to use that cashless society right? Which side of that do you come down on?
I'm really torn on it because I agree with both sides of it.
I know, right? Me too.
Like, it's really hard to demonstrate the behavior that you want to teach your kids when I'm not going to go to the grocery store with, you know, $280 in 20s just because my biweekly shopping trip is $250. Right. You know, it's just, it's inconvenient to do that. When I was a kid, and probably when you were a kid, Joe, although you guys probably used more like wooden nickels and things like that.
Easy.
My mom used checks, you know, checkbook, right? So that's kind of how we grew up with it. I don't know that I even grew up when the whole cash, you know, paying cash for thing. My dad would pay cash for a lot of stuff. You know, he'd go to the bank and cash his check and take some out and cash for the week. But I'm really torn on it because the reality is that kids are seeing what we do, right? And we use debit cards or credit cards for our everyday purchases, not cash. So to take them to the bank to withdraw cash to then go to Toys R Us to buy their thing, I get the sensation that provides, but I like using technology. I mean, they're going to use technology anyway. I mean, for crying out loud, they're using iPads in second grade now for learning. So they might as well use iPads for tracking their money too.
Right.
Apps and that sort of thing.
I thought when I was in that hallway that we would have time, that I would have time to take the recorder around like I have in past years. I ended up talking to so many different people that before I knew it, the expo was closed. Thought I'd come back the next day, but because I was the MC of FinCon and had other responsibilities, I didn't end up making it back. So that is the only interview that I got from the expo hall was talking to Bill Dwight. Supposed to be number one. That ended up being the only one. After that, all the rest of these interviews are going to be from our party that we co-hosted with our friends over at SoFi. And the reason we hosted a party was because of the FinTech competition. You know how every Friday we have the FinTech segment? Well, SoFi OG was the sponsor of the FinTech competition this year. And we decided, because of our mutual interest in that topic, to host a party celebrating the competitors there. So we had the FinTech competitors, and we had a lot of friends of the show and a lot of friends of SoFi that were there. Now, I'll say this. We already talked about some of the things that we loved and didn't love about that party over on the Green Room episode. So if you want to hear about the sausage being made, you can tune in a couple weeks ago to FinCon Part 1, Kathleen and I talking about what we liked and didn't like about the party. But overall, OG, we're on a rooftop bar. It was a beautiful place. We're at a rooftop bar. I have a table that actually has a fire pit in the middle of the table that obviously wasn't going because we had all the stuff set up, but had a fire pit in the middle of the table, and we had these couches, and we set up the microphones, and we sat with the, and you're going to hear people talk about this over and over, how beautiful it was, with the sky up above and traffic right below us. Just, you look down and there was the street. And just a fantastic setting. But we ended up talking to a lot of different people. But why don't we start off with Dan Macklin, one of the co-founders at SoFi and our friend here on the show, OG, talking about the FinTech competition and SoFi's interest in that. And also just getting caught up on a little bit of what happens at this particular innovator. You know, SoFi themselves is a FinTech company, right? So
yeah.
Let's find out what's going on with them. And Dan Macklin from SoFi is... You're my next victim on the couch, man.
Hey, I'm a willing victim.
Well, thank you for doing this party with us. This is a beautiful spot, and Madeline is SoFi. She's the master at picking the most awesome place in San Diego.
Madeline is great. She is the greatest.
Yes, but you guys did this fantastic competition, a FinTech competition. Why was it important to you to sponsor that competition?
So we sponsored this competition because when we started the company, we started it at Stanford University, and we saw so many classmates who had really, really great ideas for companies, but they didn't start those companies because they needed to pay the bills. They needed to pay their student loan debt, which was the biggest bill each month. So because of that, they ended up taking a safer 9-to-5 type job where they got a monthly salary. And consequently, those companies never happen. And that's a shame. That's a shame for the country. Entrepreneurship levels are actually lower now than they have been. And we want to do our bit to make it easier for someone with student loan debt to start a company.
So you guys do a bunch of work with entrepreneurs.
Correct. We started this program, the entrepreneur program. We defer the loan so you can concentrate your money and your resource to starting your company. But secondly, and more importantly, we actually help you to start that company. We're introducing people to investors. We're helping them with their social media strategies. We are promoting their products to our customer base. And in that way, we're helping them in ways that otherwise they wouldn't get. And we're doing our little bit to help them make a success of themselves.
You guys aren't done at SoFi. There's some new stuff kind of on the horizon that we can't quite talk about yet.
Yeah, there is. We didn't start SoFi to be a student loan company, even though that was our first product. We started it to be able to offer people solutions across all of their financial lives. So our ambition is in 5 or 10 years to be able to do almost everything for you. And we can't do that overnight. We're adding products, you know, one by one. So now we have student loan refinancing, we have mortgages, we have personal loans, we have a wealth product that we've introduced to our own customer base. So they can invest money now, not borrow money, but invest money. And then we have other stuff coming down the pipe. So lots of exciting stuff.
I can't wait. More to come. Dave Macklin, thanks for hanging out. And by the way, thanks for being our partner on this party.
Joe, pleasure. Our pleasure. Thank you.
Exciting to hear about SoFi's plan for world domination, OG.
I like the fact that they didn't launch with all of their stuff, you know, but rather are phasing it in as they increase their capabilities and as they increase their technology, as well as brand recognition and that sort of stuff.
And how about the work you talked about that they do with entrepreneurs? I mean, helping them find an entrepreneurial community, giving them not just the loan and the interest rate, but doing as much to help them incubate the company as possible. I think any bank that's going to set you up with as many resources as possible to be successful is great for both parties. And the fact that more, you know, the traditional banks don't get that. And I know there are sponsors, so that sounds self-serving, but name other banks that do that.
Yeah, maybe you get some support from a local community credit union or something like that locally, but to connect you with folks from all over is something that's unique to them for sure.
You're already getting jealous of the sounds of the party in the background?
Oh, yeah. I've resigned myself to the fact that I'm just not going to be invited to anything ever.
Next year, but you were invited next year. Now that you're out of the closet, you know? You can join us in Dallas. I mean, that's a long commute for you, I know, but we also got to catch up with some of our past guests. You know, the guest in the FinTech segment, OG, I think that was the most talked about of any that we've had, at least in the top two or three, was Laurent Armory from Debitize. And you know Debitize, that takes your credit card and turns it into a debit card by paying it immediately right as soon as you use it. So if you want to get those reward points, but you don't trust yourself to use a credit card responsibly, you can still use the credit card because it's going to be treated like a debit card. And it's the first time I got to meet Laurent. And it was really neat to meet him in person. And so we sat down on the couch and had a little discussion about what's next at Debitize.
And Laurent Armory from Debitize is back. Dude, you're at our party.
Yeah, hey, Joe. It's great to be back.
I'm so glad that you could come to our party. How do you like FinCon, by the way?
FinCon's amazing. This is my first time, and it's been a great event for us. The competition, all the networking, all the bloggers and journalists, and getting to meet people and get people excited about Debitize has been a really good experience for us.
And congratulations out of all those competitors. We just saw you on the main stage today winning the big fat check.
One of the two big fat checks. Yes.
Yeah, but
thank
that
you.
Was still pretty cool. I mean, yeah, that was some stiff competition.
I've never held a one of those big checks before. That's pretty exciting.
Wasn't that great?
Yeah.
Too bad it didn't say Publishers Clearinghouse and you had $1 million. Then you just throw a Debitize away, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I just put a couple like extra zeros on the end. I'll see if Dan from SoFi notices.
I'm sure he won't. Those guys with their money, they won't even notice. No. So, any big news going on at Debitize? What's new since we talked to you on the show?
We officially launched Credit Optimizer yesterday at the show. So, we talked about it on your show, but it was one of those things people had to email us and ask for it.
Okay, what is it?
So Credit Optimizer, we will make an extra payment right before your bank reports your utilization, which is the amount of your credit line you use. So you typically want to be below 10%. The bank reports it once a month, that we're basically going to game it and pay you down to 1% as long as you have the money in your Debitize account.
That's awesome. And how's it gone? So, well, you said you just released that.
Yeah. But yeah, we sort of soft released it a week ago, and okay, we had a bunch of people that, you know, sort of found it anyways. It's like hidden in the settings, and a bunch of people just found it and sort of turned it on. So they've been using it already, but yesterday sort of the announcement. We had a little article in Bank Innovation as well, and yeah, we're excited to get people on it and to get some feedback.
Congratulations. Now, in the Stacking Benjamins Green Room, the closed Facebook group that anybody can join, you just go to stackingbenjamins.com/greenroom. I think out of all the fintech companies, dude, that have been on the show, there was more discussion about debitized than any of them. Have you had any people have some real misconceptions about the app before that you have to, like, explain, no, it's not that?
Yeah, I mean, we've had a lot of people that, you know, some people don't understand that we're actually, like, moving money, which, you know, that's sort of the whole point. But yeah,
I was thinking, what are you doing then?
And, you know, a lot of people want us to pay the whole balance. They don't understand that, like, you can just pay the statement balance and that, you know, you won't be charged interest or late fees. And so that's just, like, an educational component. We're probably going to try to build out somewhat of, like, a knowledge base on the website.
Yeah.
Because you sort of just take for granted that everybody knows, like, exactly how credit cards work and exactly how, like, your credit score works. But
that's hard getting the word out about that, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
We had the guys from the Draft App team on. They are regulars of ours. And they were talking about it's kind of a chicken-the-egg problem that you need users to build out the extra stuff. But if you don't build out the extra stuff, you know, then the users don't come. Yep. So how do you guys kind of look at that problem?
It, you know, changes day by day. We have 100 things we want to do, and we can only do like a couple of them at a time. We try to tackle the sort of biggest needle moving things that we can, to whether like that's improving our user experience or this new feature that, you know, some people were asking for and that we think even people that weren't asking for will love it and we'll benefit from it.
I bet there's a danger, though, of going after too many squirrels, too, like on the other side.
Absolutely, yeah. No, we have to sort of try to stay focused, and it sometimes it's really tempting to, like, want to build the best product ever and add these cool, like, features, and right. You know, everybody's asking for stuff, and we want to give everybody, you know, everything that they're asking for, but sometimes we sort of have to try to also keep it a little bit focused, and sort of we want to make sure we do the one thing that we do really, really well.
Dude, I want debitized Pac-Man. Can you give me that?
Pac-Man?
Yeah, you know, the video game.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I can pay my credit cards and then I can play a video game.
Sure. Coming out next week.
Yeah. He's like, what the hell are you talking about, man?
All right, thanks. Did I hear you right?
So thanks for coming to our party and congratulations on the big win today.
Awesome, thanks.
Oh, gee, their next thing, by the way, is the credit card reporting date feature. The premium feature, how do you think that's going to go? That's pretty cool.
If the credit score system continues to be a game itself, which is what it is, then there's going to be continued pressure from people to figure out ways to
game
it back.
Yes.
And I'm totally okay with that. Incidentally, in my research, the magic number is $2.
Which magic number is $2?
In terms of utilization. Oh. One card with a $2 balance reporting.
Really?
That's the magic number.
That's amazing.
Now, I just read that. That's not me actually experimenting with it. But
I do have one issue about Laurent's product. I mean, ostensibly, this is to help you use a debit card or use a credit card like a debit card. Mm-hmm. And if you are trying to increase your credit score, why are you trying to do that? You're trying to do that so that you have more credit available, right?
Well, yes and no. I mean, what if you – well, we just bought a house a couple of years ago. I was very mindful of the impact of how things report and, you know, kind of gaming the system. I know that all the Dave Ramsey fans out there will get a little ticked off, but, you know, there's some pretty healthy and attractive credit card offers in terms of, you know, bonus points and that sort of thing. And if you're responsible, you should take advantage of those things. If banks are going to, you know, send you on a free trip to Europe, you might as well take it. But not at the expense of bad financial management or interest or any of that sort of stuff. But, you know, if this is just a way to help maximize those things that are already sitting right in front of you, I love it. And frankly, that's how we don't do this anymore because it's just kind of a pain. But that's what we used to do with our credit cards. I would use the credit card, but then on Friday I would pay it all off when we got our paychecks just because I didn't want to ever have that $2,000 credit card bill at the end of the month. You know, for whatever reason, four or $500 bills was much easier to swallow.
Yeah. Most of the new companies that we're going to talk to that were in the fintech competition this year, we did not talk to at the party. We actually scheduled meetings so that we wouldn't have the background noise. So to have them come down to the basement and talk about it. Oh, gee. So over the next several Fridays, you'll hear from them. We did get to catch up, though, with a gentleman, Larry Ruff, from a company called Invoodoo. And let's hear about Invoodoo.
and Larry Ruffram in Voodoo. Welcome to FinCon, man.
Thank you. It's been awesome.
This is your first FinCon.
Yes, it is, by far.
So what do you think here? Rooftop, gas lamp, quarter?
It's just beautiful. Thank you.
We're having a great time. We're so happy you could make it. Well, we're so excited about FinTech, and we talk FinTech a lot on the show. But tell us about Invoodoo, because this is really cool.
Well, really, it's cash envelopes on a debit card. We've been working with clients for 20 years to get out of debt. And we found some of the hardest ones. We've used the best technology around, and we still were struggling with some of the hardest ones. So we developed Invoodoo, which is, I have here my personal Invoodoo with me and my wife.
Yep, so we got Larry's phone here right in front of us, and I'm looking at your allowance, your medical, dental, your Jen's allowance.
And that's not the allowance. That's the actual cash balance in that envelope.
In that envelope.
Right now.
So this is taking the envelope system and making it electronic.
Yes.
That's awesome.
Yes,
okay.
It is. So I have, for example, $130 in groceries.
Okay.
We have my allowance, my wife's allowance. We have allowances for vacations, Christmas, auto repairs, monthly.
And auto repairs are something that everybody forgets to put aside money for that. And then the muffler's dragging behind the car, and you go, oh, crap, there's no money.
Yes. And so every envelope here gets an automatic contribution every week.
Okay.
Every week. And so when we want to spend, if I want to buy some groceries, I just tap this. I swipe, this one's integrated with Wells Fargo.
Okay.
I swipe my Wells Fargo card, and it instantly, within a second, it's come out of here.
Okay.
So my wife and I know where we are with every envelope at all times. It's a beautiful thing.
How many different banks does it work with?
Right now, we are with Wells Fargo.
Okay.
Within 2 weeks, we'll be with PayPal.
Okay.
Within 6 months, we should be within about 8 other banks and growing quickly. So
that's exciting.
So we're in the process of integrating with a number of banks right now.
How much can I customize these categories? Because I see, like, let's say that I don't really need the education budget right now.
Yeah. So it's totally customizable.
Okay.
So it's set up only asking you 5 questions. And with those 5 questions, we set up 22 envelopes for you. But you can delete any envelope. You can add as many envelopes as you like. You can change the names. You can do whatever you want.
And how much does it cost?
So right now it's free.
Okay.
But very soon it'll be a volunteer pay. So you'll pay every month either $0 up to $10, whatever you feel it's worth to you.
So, and that's how you guys make money?
Yes.
Is there other ways that you plan to monetize in the future?
Yes.
Okay.
We have banks offering us as much as $1 per customer per month right now.
Yep.
So that's in bank fees. We have banks offering us so much per new account that comes in because they have Invoodoo or other banks don't yet.
Got it. So banks like this because you bring them customers.
We bring them customers. Plus, we keep them more loyal.
Yes, right.
Plus, we found that anybody who uses Invoodoo within just 2 months, they usually have more cash than they've ever had in their account within just 2 months.
That's really cool. And I can, well, and it's, and you know why? It's because you know where your money's going.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. You know where it is. You know where it's going. And it's a beautiful thing.
Dude, it's a great looking app. It's colorful.
Well, thank you.
That looks like fun. So the app's called Invoodoo. We'll link to it on our show notes at stackybenjamins.com. Thanks for spending a few minutes with us, Larry, and
Fantastic.
Showing it off.
We're glad to be here.
So this idea of envelope systems is a neat one. Apparently, there were two envelope companies, Envelopes. Remember them? Envelopes. They were also at the FinTech competition. And then Larry's competing company, Invoodoo, was also in the FinTech competition. So that'd be kind of weird, wouldn't it? Being in a competition with your direct head-to-head competitor, but I guess that's what competition's all about.
Yeah, it'd be weird if like two teams of the same sport played against each other to see who was better.
Wouldn't that be strange? And then there's like some playoff at the end that like, you know.
And there's a collection of all sorts of teams that played each other and then
that be
whittled it down to one single champion.
That is so strange. And I know that it was painful, by the way. I'm sitting there talking to Larry. And when he said the only bank they work with right now is Wells Fargo, that stuff all broke just before FinCon. Like, you know, he shows up in San Diego and he's like, yeah, we'll have other banks. But like when he was saying that, that was the one time I wish it was a video podcast.
Yeah.
Because you could see the politician, you know, just, I'm going to get through this. It's going to be great.
Yeah. hitched his horse to the wrong, or hitched his carriage to the wrong horse, maybe.
Yeah, that's sad. We also made some new friends at FinCon. Actually, some of these are friends that go back a long time. Grayson Bell from Debt Roundup, a fantastic website online. Grayson has never been on a podcast, and he helps a lot of people with their blogs. He helps a lot of people with the technology underneath their blogs, but he also runs a fine site himself. So I said, Grayson, time for you to finally get on a podcast. So Grayson Bell from Debt Roundup here.
And Grayson Bell from Debt Roundup joins us on the couch. Dude, welcome to the party.
How you doing, man? I'm so excited to be here. This is awesome.
I am so excited you're here.
Look at this view.
I know. Isn't that incredible? But Debt Roundup, man, we haven't had you on the show yet, so I'm glad I just grabbed you. You're like, what do you want to talk about? I want to talk about debt because people have too much debt.
I used to be one of those people, man, all day long. I had a jet ski. I had two cars. You know, I had $50,000 of credit card debt. Paid all that mess off, man. I've changed my life. Now I help people pay off theirs.
But who cares about the debt? Because you had a jet ski.
Well, you know, all my friends wanted to ride that jet ski.
That's right.
They didn't see the monthly payments, but love riding that jet ski.
Yeah, now you have a young family, too. Was that a struggle when you started having kids?
For me, I have a son that's 3.5.
Right.
And I actually made sure, I had a goal that I wanted to pay off that debt before we had our first kid.
Did you really?
That was one of the main motivators for me to get that debt paid off, because I knew kids are expensive.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to be in a position where I can't provide for my family because I am drowning in debt.
When you had the $50,000 in debt, most people have this point where they just say, you know what, it's got to change. Like, you know, Tony Robbins talks about people change because of desperation or perspiration, right? Do you remember where you were when you're like, this can't happen anymore?
Yeah, man, I was actually I had $50,000 in credit card debt. I had another $25,000 on top in loans, in car loans, and the jet ski.
Okay.
So I had about $75,000 total and some change.
Yeah.
It was literally one day I realized, where's all my money going? I was only paying minimum payments on about 8 credit cards and stuff like that, and the minimum payments on the loans. I actually calculated it up. I put it in Mint.com. I signed up for a Mint.com account because I was like, where's all my money going? All of my payments totaled over $1,000, more than my mortgage.
Oh my.
It's more than my mortgage.
Yeah.
I just sat there and I go, what am I doing? I'm college educated. I'm not a dumb guy, but I was just I didn't even care. You know, I was young. You know, they give you credit cards back then. It was before the financial crisis, and
right,
they literally would give you everything.
Right.
I mean, I had over $300,000 in credit limits, and I only made $36,000 a year.
So for you, it was like almost like going to the dentist. Once you saw what the problem was in black and white, that was what changed everything.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think the minimum monthly payment thing is a disservice, especially back then. It was only $20.
Right.
Now it's a percentage of your overall amount that you owe.
Yes.
And that changed after the financial crisis. But
yes,
back then, $20 is nothing.
Yes.
You know, you're making $36,000 a year, and out of college, that's a lot. You know, I was like, ooh, now I'm making money.
Right.
But when you see it all in front of you and you just, it was like a game changer, man.
Were you afraid to look at it, though?
Yes.
Yeah.
I ignored it for years because I just enjoyed.
Yeah.
I the sad thing is I think I wanted to be, I wanted to be a baller to my friends.
Right.
I wanted to, you know, like when we went out, I paid for drinks. You
right.
know, like I'm the jet ski guy.
Right.
You know, like, oh, Grayson's badass. He's got a jet ski. Well, you know what? I was dying on the other side.
I got to talk to you about one more thing because you did something else that was really inspirational. You left that $36,000 job. I mean, you left working for the man and you went out on your own. How tough was that to move into full-time entrepreneurship?
Well, when I left, it's almost been a year. So I worked at a job for 8.5 years. Couldn't really grow anymore. Kind of hit the mark. I had been side hustling for years, and I actually already surpassed my monthly income on my business.
Okay.
But the hard thing for me was I'm a planner, and I have to plan everything out to a T. I'm not a financial planner. I just plan everything.
No.
The benefits were really good. I had really good benefits. Really low health insurance. Now I pay a lot of money in health insurance.
Yeah, that's like golden handcuffs right there.
Yeah. But I realized that as self-employed, the ceiling of my earnings were only stopped by me, you know, and what I provided. I don't have to worry about talking to a CEO or budget cuts and stuff like that. I have an unlimited ceiling to where I can go. And that's what my dad goes, Grayson, think of it this way. You can either work for an entrepreneur or you can be one.
Right.
So I was like, you know what? I'm going to be one.
There was a great quote. I think it was Robert Allen, the real estate guy, said. He said there's two doors in life. One is security and one is opportunity. And whenever you reach for the security door, you get neither. And I always thought that was so powerful. But now I bet instead of working 9 to 5 and coming home, you work long. Well, I know you work longer hours now than you ever did.
I can't remember the quote, but I think it's, you know, entrepreneurs are the only ones that'll leave a 40-hour work week to work 70 hours.
Right, right.
I think it's true, but, you know, I work a lot.
Yeah.
I work a lot of hours, but I'm building. I'm in a growth phase.
Yeah.
You have to work a lot of hours, but the thing is that I can leave during the day and go pick up my son from school. I can stock and take him to the park or get ice cream.
Yeah.
I don't have to ask my boss for a day off. I just take it.
But when you take a day off, there's consequences.
There are consequences. I get emails every day.
Right.
So and people contact me every day. So there's always going to be a backlog.
Yeah.
But I'm actually in a point now where I'm starting to hire people to actually help me out. And that's the only way I can grow more is by having a team around me. So
the site is called Debt Roundup. We'll link to it on our show notes at stackingbenjamins.com. Grayson, thanks for hanging out, man.
Joe, I appreciate it, man. It's been a pleasure.
Another guy we'd never met here before, OG, is Jeffrey Troll from Student Loan Hero. Let's do some talking about student loan debt.
And Jeffrey Troll from Student Loan Hero joins us on the show. Welcome, man.
Thanks so much for having me on.
Dude, I'm so glad you could be here. Rooftop bar, little Stacking Benjamins party. How's your FinCon been so far?
Oh, it's been awesome. Been one of the best for sure. The party last night was amazing. Just beautiful view and great people as always. Great crowd, huge crowd, lots of fun.
So Student Loan Hero, what do you guys do? Tell us about it.
Student Loan Hero is a free resource for anybody that has student loan debt and is repaying their student loans. So we offer a ton of free tools where anyone can come on, they can create an account, they can sync their student loans kind of mint.com style on our dashboard. And they can monitor them all from one place, choose different repayment options that might be best for them. And other than that, we just have a great blog. It's a great educational tool. Basically, like any question you could ever think of about student loans, we probably answer it on there.
And our friend Dan Macklin at SoFi says, yeah, you guys are a great partner for them.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, we love working with those guys. I mean, student loan refinancing is becoming more and more popular and a great solution for a lot of people to either lower their student loan payments or just save a lot of money by refinancing your student loans and getting a lower interest rate. So we're really, really glad to have SoFi as a partner. They're really leaders in the space and doing a lot of great things.
When's the time, Jeffrey, when people shouldn't refinance their student loans? Because sometimes that's a bad idea.
Yeah, definitely. So we make sure everybody knows before they refinance their student loans, they really need to look into the implications if they're federal student loans in particular. Federal student loans have some repayment options that private student loans don't. And some of those are, for example, income-driven repayment, which can lower your monthly payments based on your income. Student loan forgiveness options, like public service loan forgiveness. You can have your federal loans forgiven in 10 years on public service loan forgiveness if you have a certain type of job, and nonprofit, things like that. Those options aren't available anymore if you refinance federal student loans, which basically turns them into a private student loan. So anybody who's thinking of taking advantage of those options might not be the best candidate to refinance their loans.
And there's more about that at Student Loan Hero. Is it studentloanhero.com?
Yes, studentloanhero.com. You can go check out our blog. We have pretty much all the answers to those questions, including on federal student loan refinancing or any kind of refinancing question, any student loan question. We have it on there. If not, you can ask us, and we'll shoot you an answer with our best advice.
Thanks for hanging out, Jeffrey. Go get some pizza, man.
I will. Thanks so much.
All right.
And while we're on the topic of student loans, Jay Fleischman has a fantastic podcast about student loan debt, and we actually caught up with him, too. Another guy I never talked to. In fact, it's funny. When I went and I grabbed him, I saw him across the room. I went and grabbed him, and he turns around, and he says something like, "I don't even think you knew who I was." I'm like, of course I know who you are. Sat down and we talked about Jay's awesome student loan podcast.
All right. And next victim on our couch, Mr. Jay Fleischman joins us. I'm glad you could come on.
Hey, I'm glad to be here. I'm glad to see you got out of the basement.
I know, isn't that? I'm glad you could make it to our party.
Well, I'm glad to be here.
But let's talk about a party. How's that for a transition?
Yeah, great.
Which is the student loan show.
Oh, it is all party all the time.
Absolutely.
I mean, student loans, who doesn't love them? It's like a rave.
Yeah, right.
Really?
Right. Go get a tattoo with a couple commas in it about all your student loans.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Student loan show, I do it every week. We went dark for the summer, but we're coming back the first week in October.
Awesome.
So it comes out every week, every Tuesday.
It's kind of like the school year, right? You take the summer off.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. 20, 25 minutes, pure information. I try to break the big problems down into really simple, easy steps, really small solutions that you can implement and get at least a little bit ahead of the game. And then every week we go a little bit further. We attack a little small problem, and we try to get the best help that we can for you.
We talked to Dan Macklin at SoFi recently, our sponsor, about some of the work that they're doing with companies, trying to get them to offer incentives to people, which are paying down your student loans.
Right.
Do you think that's the wave of the future, that that's, you're going to see more of that, or are companies going to ignore that?
You mean employers paying...
paying off your student loans, like as a perk to get you to come work for them.
Oh, man, it is going to be the newest perk.
Will it be?
It's going to... Well, it started earlier in 2016 when Pricewaterhouse announced that they were going to offer it. And now we're seeing companies come onto the bandwagon because it's harder and harder to get really good talent. And that really good talent comes with a really big student loan price tag. The only way to get the good people, I think, is going to be doing this. Just kind of like when 401ks first came out. Very rare. When they first came out, not every company was offering them. And then slowly but surely, every big company had to come online. It's a competitive edge.
You're on top of some of the legislation stuff happening. Do you think that there's going to be a change that we're going to see? Because obviously, everybody's waiting for the next shoe to drop because there's so much student loan debt. Yeah. Anything moving there?
I don't think that Congress can figure out what to order for lunch at this point. So, you know, if they get past that, then maybe something else. I think a lot of it depends upon the election, obviously. We want to see who gets in. I would love to see some changes to the way that student loans are handled, particularly the private student loans. I think that those are really the scourge. That's really what's killing people. I hope that there's a change on that. I almost hope that there's not a major change on the federal student loans, because every time they make a change, it gets more and more and more complicated because they're trying to plug the holes in the boat.
Right.
And they're never going to just wipe the slate clean and start over with a fresh set of regulations. So I almost want them to just stop messing around with the federal loans. We'll come back to those later. But then let's start working on the private loans and how we're going to make those affordable for people to handle. How do we fix that situation? And I don't, smarter guys than me don't know the answer. I certainly don't know the answer.
It sounds like a big fat pain, and there's more to come, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Stay tuned.
That's right. So what are a couple of the episodes we can look forward to on the Student Loan Show coming up?
Oh, we're doing a lot of Q&A stuff. We're doing a lot of work on the downfall of ITT Tech that happened a couple of weeks ago, all the for-profit schools that are going down. Yesterday, as we record this, ACICS, which is the accrediting agency that covered all of the for-profit schools, their ability to accredit was pulled by Department of Education. That's going to be a major, major problem for a lot of people. So you're going to hear a lot about that on the Student Loan Show. Also going to be talking more about what you can do if you're in default, if you need to rehabilitate your loans, some new strategies, talking about refinancing your private student loans. It's always a big deal. I love the work that the guys at SoFi are doing, as well as some other companies. I think that they're really on the cutting edge of things. I think that more and more people are going to wind their way into their doors.
That's awesome. And if you're driving down the road right now listening, or you're out for the morning walk, we'll link to the Student Loan Show on our Stacking Benjamins website. So thanks a ton, man, for hanging out.
Hey, thanks for having me by.
Hey, trivia fans. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor. Well, no, I'm not that. I guess I'm OG. And it's time for your daily dose of trivia. Can you tell I'm reading this? For those of you who skipped my awesome opening...
It was my opening.
I mean, Joe's awesome opening. We call you people scoundrels. Who writes this stuff? Most of this episode comes to you from FinCon Convention in San Diego. Okay, all right. So here's your question. All right, I got this. So here's your trivia question. When was San Diego first settled? And as a side note here, I got to be honest, it's very hard not to say San Diego when you look at that word as an anchorman. But when was San Diego first settled? I'll be back with the answer you'll be bragging about all day in just a minute.
That was so horrible. OG and I are excited to have two sponsors at Stacking Benjamins that we can send people to who will help any of our listeners get their financial house in order. First of all, let's solve your debt problems by sending you to stackingbenjamins.com/SoFi. That's S-O-F-I. We talked to Dan Macklin about SoFi because they started in student loans, but then quickly moved on from there. We wondered exactly why they started with student loans.
Student loans just seem to be a bigger issue for people. There's over $1 trillion of student loan debt out there. And it really is and continues to be a pretty inefficient market. Lots of people overpaying. But we've quickly moved on from that. So as well as student loans, we're now doing other things, including mortgages and personal loans. But student loans was just a great entry point because so many people were overpaying.
So if you're someone who's overpaying for student loans or for other types of debt, whether it be mortgage or personal loans, head to stackingbenjamins.com/SoFi. And once you've been there, we'll send you to stackingbenjamins.com/MagnifyMoney. Because the thing about Magnify Money that I find really cool is that they do not ask for any personal information before showing you how different financial products rank against each other. And part of that rating system is just how little fine print there is. So we asked Nick Clement, CEO at Magnify Money, to explain more about their rating system and helping you avoid fine print.
Oh, the fine print can get out of control. You'll always see marketing which tells you this is free or we're even going to put money in your pocket if you do business with us. But then when you look underneath the hood, you can find fees on top of fees on top of fees. And some of the worst are in the world of overdrafts where you can be charged $35 per item. And then after 5 days of a negative balance, charged another $35. Particularly in that area, you see banks that are worse than payday lenders, although they're not advertised that way.
So for checking accounts, savings accounts, and debt products that you understand, head to stackingbenjamins.com/MagnifyMoney.
Hey everyone, you can quit sweating because I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug. No, I'm OG. Why do they keep writing this stuff? And I've triumphantly returned with your trivia answer. Now that I can agree with. I am triumphant. Okay, let me tell you, if I control the show, we're not broadcasting anything in a penthouse in San Diego. Doug, stop it. Live from the highest penthouse. Okay, blah, 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 blah. All right, I'll negotiate the next contract. Here we go. Back to the trivia answer. Before the break, I asked, when was San Diego first settled? The answer, when the Spanish had first discovered the area in 1602, they didn't return and settle the area until 1769. That means that the El Presidio Real de San Diego was established May 14th, 1769, probably far later than you would have thought. Wow. Over 150 years to settle the area, and here I thought Joe's mom's friend Ethel played the long game, settling into dinner down at the Sizzler. Keep telling her that dinner would go a lot faster if you put your teeth back in, Ethel. See ya.
Hey, we're going to get back to more from FinCon 2016, but before we do that, it's time for us to fire up the hotline. We call this the OG has redone his practice so that he can help you with your money segment. How do you like that one? It's a little rough.
Last week's was better, but a little wordy.
Yeah, it's a little rough. I'll have to work on that. So if you are somebody that needs help with your money and you think that OG is the person to do that for you, head to stackybenjamins.com/OG, and he'll talk to you more about working one-on-one. But that's not what we're doing right now. Right now, we're going to talk to our good buddy, Sean, on the OG is now taking clients hotline.
Hey, Joe, OG. Thanks so much for the show. I have a question about teachers' retirement accounts. My uncle passed away in March, and he was an administrator and had a relatively large IRA with VALIC, the Variable Annuity Life Insurance Corporation. Apparently, he didn't like to lose any money on his retirement assets. Sigh. So he had it all in this variable annuity, which apparently the guy told me makes about 2% right now. My aunt, who is the beneficiary of everything, she has her own small individual IRA. And I'm wondering what to do here because I'm not necessarily comfortable with several hundred thousand dollars being in a variable annuity and not kind of doing anything. Do we merge the two accounts or should I just let that large one B and maybe play around with hers, get her into the stock market and into some equities? I kind of just, I don't know, just something about this kind of rubs me the wrong way to just leave it with that variable annuity contract. So I'm calling basically for advice. Should we let them be and just use hers as the play account, or should we merge them into a new IRA and have a different plan? Of course, the problem is, how do you convince somebody to do something saying that there will be some risk? So that's the thing. I think she doesn't want to lose any money. So thanks for your advice. Appreciate it.
Oh, Sean, we'd love to give you advice, but unfortunately, we don't know you well enough to give advice. We can, however, help point you in the right direction. And I have to tell you, I love the sigh. I laughed out loud when I heard the sigh. I wish my microphone wasn't on mute, because that was pretty good. Yeah, so OG, directionally, what do you think about Sean's situation here?
Well, let's just talk from a high-level standpoint first. When somebody passes away with a qualified plan, whether it's a IRA, a 401k, a 403b, which this is can probably be a 403b, would be my guess here, then there's a couple of things that happen. So we've got a beneficiary. Beneficiary is the wife. And now we have to decide whether or not we keep that in the name of the original owner, and we have to follow some rules, or do we transfer that into the ownership of a different person? Because it's a qualified plan, you really only have a couple of different choices. One is you can keep it in the ownership in the name of the original contributor, but now you have to distribute it over the next 5 years or over that person's, the existing person's life expectancy. Quite often, I would say that, and I can't think of a, I can think of one reason why you wouldn't do this, but I've never experienced it. More often than not, the beneficiary of a qualified plan then assumes that as their own if it's a spouse. So
roll it over to their name?
It's just theirs, right? So it ceases to be Uncle Bob's and now it's Aunt Susie's, right? It's just hers.
What is that? Just some simple paperwork?
Simple paperwork.
Okay.
Yep. VALIC, good, bad, or indifferent, certainly has different investment options that you can choose within that plan. Just because your uncle chose the conservative options in there doesn't mean that there's not more aggressive options. You can contact them to talk to them more about, you know, increasing the risk tolerance if that's something that you want to do. But I think you're dealing with two separate things here first. First thing is you want to take the money, whether it stays in VALIC or not in VALIC is immaterial. It's step one, and have that owned by Aunt Susie or whatever her name is. And that's just simply some paperwork. The second thing that you want to consider then is from a risk tolerance standpoint, timeframes and goals, now how do you invest the money? Because just because it's in VALIC doesn't mean that you can't invest it the way that you want. No different than if it was at Fidelity or Schwab or Vanguard or wherever. Be careful. I heard you use a couple of pieces of language there that I can assure you will not engender much trust if you bring this language into the dialogue with your aunt. Do not use the words play account, because trust me, none of this is her play account. How you can talk to her about investing it is talking about long-term market cycles, and you can talk to her about the ups and downs of the stock market. And certainly there, from an allocation standpoint, you could create one that has some opportunity for growth, but still limits some downside exposure. And I guess at the end of the day, this is her money. Right. If she doesn't want to have any variability in the returns, you got to respect that. But be careful in the language that you choose to use there.
You know, it's funny. There's different types of risk, too. I think I talked to her about that, is that whenever I hear people talk about risk, they talk about downside, you know, protection, that one type of risk. But I think a bigger risk, if her goal is longer term, is the risk that she's not going to keep up with inflation. And, you know, if she's earning 2 and inflation's at 3, you're getting a third lower return than what inflation is. So you're losing.
So you're going backwards every single year.
Yeah, you're buying less bread with that money, even though you're sitting it away to buy more bread. You're buying less. You know, I had some clients back in the day that were farmers. They had a real problem, OG, with risk. And I started talking about that and they kind of got it, but they're like, but I still don't like losing money. And I said, depending on the time frame, your best chance of actually making money without much risk depends on the asset class that historically has done the best over that time frame. So as an example, over 1 year, you might use one type of investment. Over 5 years, you're going to use a whole different type. Over 10 years, you're going to use a third. And I said, what would you say if I told you in the fall to go plant some corn? And my farmer clients looked at me and they said, you don't plant corn in the fall. Exactly. That's the way I think about using CDs for a 10-year goal. You know, you don't use a CD for a 10, because over 10 years, the chance of losing money in large company stocks is not high. If you look historically, your chance out of most 10-year periods, you actually made good money. In almost every 10-year period, you at least broke even or came out at least a little bit ahead. There are precious few 10-year periods where you actually lost money. So if I'm planting corn and I've got 10 years that I want that corn to grow, I'm going to look at, you know, large company stocks as a basis. And if I want to take less risk, let's get crazy here, you can actually add riskier investments to that and actually drive down the risk of you losing money and make it even more likely that you make money over that 10-year period, even though you're adding even more risky things than large company stocks. So I find that that type of discussion, you know, it might be a little technical for your aunt, but
well, it also depends on how old she is. I mean, and what her time frames are and income needs and all that sort of stuff. So far beyond the scope of.
Absolutely. But matching the time frame. My point was matching the time frame with the investment. There are types of investments that work over different time frames. And, and you know, when you talk to me about 5 years and you're going to use leave the money in your savings account, I think, why would, with a 5-year goal, why would I leave the money in my savings account? I'm not sure why I'd do that. But anyway, great.
Yeah. So two steps here, get the money into Ant's name and then visit with her about, you know, timeframes, goals, and objectives and talk about different types of risk. I agree.
Thanks, Sean. We don't have time for a letter today. We're going to have to do a full letters episode because we are seriously getting behind. But if you have a letter for the mailbag, send those to joe@stackybenjamins.com. If you've got a voicemail for the show, bring those on, man. That's usually quicker getting a voicemail on. It's voicemail at or stackingbenjamins.com/voicemail. And if you want to work one-on-one with OG, it's stackingbenjamins.com/OG, the letters O-A-N-G. All right, let's get back to our FinCon stuff because we had time to catch up with some old friends. You know, Pauline Paquin was on the show a long time ago, OG, talking about, if you remember Pauline, she lives in Guatemala. And she moved there from France. And Pauline actually has this fantastic blog where she talks about moving to Guatemala called Reach Financial Independence. She actually built two houses there. She used one she lives in. The other one she uses as an income property. And she's crafted this life for herself, which is a phenomenal life. And what's cool is she made it to FinCon. So instead of the scratchy audio we had over Skype with her maybe 2.5 years ago, when she talked about being an expat, maybe moving abroad and what the upsides and downsides are, we actually got to sit down on the sofa with Pauline Paquin. Let's listen to that.
And I'm so happy we have her here in person on the couch. It's Pauline Paquin from Reach Financial Independence. How are you?
I'm excellent. Thank you so much for having me.
I cannot believe you're here. Welcome back to the United States.
Thank you.
So people, it's been a little while since you've been on the show.
Yes.
You were on and you talked about, we had a horrible Skype connection that night.
Yes.
So this is much better.
Uh-huh.
Plus I get to hang out with you, which is also awesome.
That's so awesome.
But by the way, thank you for coming to our party.
You're very welcome. It's an awesome place. Thank you for having me.
Isn't this amazing? The lights over us and the sky and
the
just...
The rooftop, the skyline, it's amazing.
It's unbelievable. But Guatemala is awesome. So tell people your story because people might not know about you.
Okay, so I started blogging about 4 years ago, and I am actually based out of Guatemala. So that's about the time I went to live there. I wanted to escape the 9-to-5. I wanted to live life on my own terms, and Guatemala offered very low cost of living, a really high bang for your buck. I have a beachfront property that I got for $50,000.
The lake you live on is gorgeous because you show the pictures of it. It's amazing.
Yes, it's a little tropical paradise, and you can get that for a fraction of the cost of what a similar property would go for in the U.S. So I had a choice. I could keep working a little longer, or I could just escape right now and live life the way I wanted to.
Was that a tough decision for you?
No, I had lived in Guatemala before, so I know what I was getting into. And I lived there 12 years ago, so you didn't have Skype and WhatsApp, and I had to get out of my condo apartment and put my arms up in the air so I could catch the good Wi-Fi to Skype home. It was absolutely insane. And a ticket was like $1,500, and now you can go back for $600. So I go back to Europe because I'm French. I go back twice a year. I come to the U.S. once or twice. And it's the best of both worlds. Like, I'm super happy to be here. It's amazing. And I'm really happy to go back to the quiet of my place. And
yeah, right.
After a while, it becomes too much.
So absolutely.
It's nice to have roots somewhere.
It is. But did you ever feel like when you made that move that you made a big mistake?
Never.
Because you've had some problems. Just reading, you know, you had to deal with some local officials on some land that you owned, and they were a bunch of machismo dudes, and you had to kick some ass. But did that worry you?
It worried me a little bit when my ex-partner and I broke up, and he was my business partner, my lawyer, and all of a sudden I was all by myself, a foreign woman in a macho country, like you say. There's a lot of corruption in my village. People were looking to me and saying, whatever, she'll never manage. And I built my own house after he left. I made the plans myself. I was the architect, I was the supervisor, I was the plumber, the electrician, and that was so empowering. I had to ask Google, of course, how you do all that, how you do a three-way switch, how you put pipes, you know, in your house so you get water and it...
But it was fun, by the way. People can go to Reach Financial Independence today and they can go back and you can still see all those posts, right?
Yes.
And about you building, because it's gorgeous.
It is amazing, yeah. I try to do everything local, so local wood, local stones. And yes, it's reachfinancialindependence.com/Guatemala. And there's the whole story there, week by week, of all the hurdles and all the growing pains and how eventually it became a nice place to live and enjoy life.
We're seeing a lot of people in the United States because of, you know, obviously it's so much less expensive living there, like you said, make moves like that. Or to Colombia, or just to other countries. Is this? What are some things that people that are thinking about that move need to remember that they usually don't?
Well, what I always recommend is you go there for 3 months. You rent an Airbnb, and you see how you like it. You talk to the expat community there, because every country is different, and you ask them. For example, in Guatemala... life is really safe outside of the capital city. I don't even lock my door, and everything's inside, and it hasn't... There have been no problems in 4 years. But you have a harder time getting things. Like the supermarkets, I'm not getting the food I like, so I have to adapt. But the fruits, the vegetables, it's a paradise. So instead of eating wine and cheese, I just have a fruit salad. And... you cannot expect to live like you do at home.
Is that hard not having great wine being French?
I'm okay. There's beer, so right. I manage. But the thing is, you cannot make a radical move that you would regret. So you cannot go buy a place in Colombia and expect life to be perfect. Life isn't perfect anyway. Anywhere, the grass is never greener. It's just different. And like... in Guatemala, I wouldn't get, if I had a family, if I had kids, for example, education would be a problem.
Right.
Medical care is more or less of a problem. You have excellent doctors in the city, but they're 500 miles away from me. So I'm a healthy single person, so I don't care about that. But maybe for a family, it would be different.
Right.
So
I like that idea of just doing the short term, and just because then you're going to find out what all the kinks are.
Exactly. And yeah. You cannot take my word for it, because I love it, because I'm a different person. So I have my hierarchy of needs and you have yours.
I'm so glad that I got to hang out with you. Thanks for spending just a few times with us.
You're welcome.
Pauline Paquin, reachfinancialindependence.com. And we'll link to it on our show notes at stackandbenjamins.com.
Thank you.
Thanks
so much
for coming to our party.
Me,
yeah.
Okay.
Oh, and we had to talk to the man himself, OG. We had to talk to Nick Clements from Magnify Money. It was great to see Nick. And we joked with him, by the way, about the fact he had a spouse there. I've never met his wife. Just a fantastic couple together. And I told Nick that clearly she was his better half. And I mean absolutely clearly in every single way. It was Nick's
She's better just half. A much better person overall.
Just a much better soul than Nick Clements, which we laugh about that. But here's always great talking to Nick. Here's Nick Clements from Magnify Money.
And Nick from Magnify Money joins us. How are you, man?
It is great to not be in the basement and instead the rooftop in San Diego.
Am I allowed
to say
that? Isn't this incredible?
No, no, you are. This is so much better. This is so much better.
We've been talking about the party all night long.
Yeah.
And it's funny, we have to say, because you and I had a conversation a long time ago.
Yeah.
You're like, okay, because you and I talked about SoFi being our other sponsor, and you're like, always ask them to do stuff because they've got really deep pockets.
Well, they have the best products. And I say that we review all of them in Magnify Money. And when you came to me and said you're getting with SoFi, I thought there'd be no better organization to partner with.
I feel
us.
Very proud. I've got two sponsors that I absolutely love, and I'm just, you know, just gushing here a little bit.
That's fine. Gush away. Gush away. It's the end of the evening. The alcohol's flowing. It's San Diego.
The lights
beautiful
just turned
weather.
On over our head, by the way.
There's a candle between us.
It's so romantic, Nick. You and me. It's just fabulous. But let's talk about, so you guys are going into the mortgage space. You said that on the show recently. Mortgages are an area where people get into trouble all the time. So I'm so glad to see that you're doing that. What is the biggest problem people have with mortgages?
So I think the biggest issue people have is they get that sense of, I really, really, really want that house. And all of a sudden you have that little feeling in your stomach and it moves up and all rational decision making disappears and you try to find a way to qualify as opposed to, does this make good financial sense?
And which is funny because even after the banking crisis, banks will still give you way more money than you could afford.
Absolutely. I mean, have a written budget, understand how much you spend each month, and most of the time, the amount of money a bank is willing to lend you, you shouldn't take it. It's just too much. I mean, qualifying, there are other issues out there, especially if you're freelance, which a lot of, I'm sure your listeners are, it can still be difficult to qualify, so a lot of what we're doing is trying to help people figure out ways to qualify, but if you do, just think long and hard before you take the maximum amount. I mean, in general, I tell people, if you're borrowing the most you can, you're probably borrowing too much.
Interest rates are...
They're
near,
low.
Well, they're at near all-time lows, and you look at these long-term charts, and they have nowhere to go but up.
Yep.
So, adjustable, fixed rate right now?
So, I mean, what I tend to advise people is that if you're looking and you're saying interest rates can only go up, then obviously you should be locking in the rates.
But you see that 5-year ARM and you're like, I might not live here for more than 5 years, and it's unbelievable.
It sounds really tempting.
Yeah.
It sounds really tempting. And it depends, right? I mean, it depends on your personal situation. People can get a good deal on a 5-year ARM and they might be moving in 3 to 4 years. If they, you know, if they're in a job where every 3 to 4 years they move, then why not? But in general, you're going to be borrowing multiples of your annual income. Right, you're going to be borrowing multiples of your annual income, and if you're going to get into trouble, it's going to be with your mortgage.
Yeah.
Right. And so what I tend to say is, think about the downside, think about the risks, and just imagine a world where you lose your job, where your income goes down, where prices go down, and you can't sell again. How do you mitigate those risks and feel comfortable about those risks? I mean, I made a horrible personal decision when I bought my home in 2008. But
did
I had
you
thought,
really?
I did. I mean, it was the worst time to buy, but I had thought through every possible downside. So even though it was a horrible decision and it was painful to watch, I had no issues making it through because, you know, they wanted to lend me almost twice what I borrowed. I mean, it's unbelievable. And people in the office were making fun of me because I was not borrowing enough, and my home wasn't the biggest compared to everyone else. But I had no issues making it through the downturn because I thought about things, and I think that's the issue, especially when you're shopping and you think about your family, the future. You imagine your kids running in the backyard, and you just stop making rational decisions.
It's so beautiful.
Right, and people start to say, are you a good parent? You don't want your children in that backyard? You don't want your children in that spacious playroom upstairs?
I mean, keeping up with the Joneses.
It's a problem.
So when you guys are doing mortgages, is it going to look a lot like your other debt product stuff where you look at the fine print? Or is the fine print for mortgages usually the same stuff?
Yeah, I mean, fine print is important. I think what's more important for consumers is just understanding how they get qualified for their unique situations. So we're going to be spending a lot of time focusing on, I'm a freelancer, what do I need to do?
Okay.
Right? I had an issue in the past, what do I need to do?
So how do I clean up my credit score?
Either clean up your credit score or understand what options are out there and do they make sense for you. Because you can find 3.5% down payment mortgages. You can find lenders out there that'll go down to 540 FICOs. I mean, there are options out there, but I think it's just really important to understand, okay, you're willing to do a 540 FICO, 3.5% down. but what does this mean for me? And should I do it now or should I wait until I qualify and improve?
What's the baggage that comes with that? Because
exactly.
The second you say that, I'm thinking just a horrible amount of baggage comes with that mortgage.
Well, what's interesting is, I mean, still the vast majority of mortgages are purchased by the U.S. government, either through Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, or the FHA. And if you have an agency-backed mortgage, in general, whether you have a 20% down or a 3.5% down, it's the U.S. government behind it, so it's not sort of the shady guy on the street corner lending you something and who knows what's going on, right? With low down payment mortgages, I'm more worried about the consumer because selling costs are like 6%. So if you're only putting 3.5% down and then something changes and you need to sell,
right,
you might not be able to afford to get out, right? And so I think a lot more of it is defending yourself against stupid decisions as opposed to what are they going to do to me. Right.
Thinking ahead of time about what could go wrong, like you did, like,
yep.
And get rid of... I had a client that was an engineer back when I was a financial planner, and he built highways. And he said, you know what, before we build any road, we look at everything that can go wrong, and we eliminate all those possibilities,
exactly.
Or we at least plan for them, and only then do we build.
You have to be your own risk manager, because I'll tell you, I've seen people in these rooms, right, where they underestimate how much they spend each month, they overestimate their likelihood of staying in the same job, they underestimate the chance of anything going wrong because they really, really, really want that house. And so I think what we're really going to be focused on is there's actually a lot more mortgage availability out there than most people realize. I mean, 540, 3.5% down, you can get a mortgage in this country today at unbelievably low rates. And guess what, folks? A 30-year fixed-rate mortgage, that is a unique U.S. offering, and we can thank Uncle Sam. The United States government is a bigger lender than any emerging market. We pointed fingers at, when I lived in Russia, right, we used to point fingers at Russia saying, we have free market in the U.S. Why is Sberbank and VTB, the big nationalized banks run by the government, shame on you? And I was in a conference where a Sberbank person looked and said, yes, but the entire U.S. mortgage market is the government. And that is the largest consumer credit market in the world. Who are you to tell us not to do this, right? So at the end of the day, as a consumer, because the taxpayer is backing your mortgage, you can borrow for 30 years at a fixed rate for like 3.whatever%, which no one else in the world can do. So that's great. But those same people in the government are also writing the rules, which makes it unbelievably easy to get yourself into a whole lot of trouble.
That's a whole different episode, man. That is a whole nother episode. You just opened up this whole like black hole that's just ugly.
Yeah. So if you are a savvy borrower who thinks about the downside, right, and plans ahead and takes advantage of these unbelievably low rates by global standards, right, no one else can get them locked in, what a great way to build wealth. Yeah. Right. If you handle it properly, I mean, just think about it. You either rent or you can get into this at a fixed rate. So your income should just move up with inflation, but you have a fixed rate mortgage for 30 years. That is a great way to build wealth as long as you don't set yourself up for failure. And so that's going to be really the focus of what we're doing is how do you not set yourself up for failure? And then obviously we're going to help try to find you to better players than others. But it's more about you not setting yourself up.
Yeah. I think it's a great place to leave it. I never get to see you enough. I'm so happy to see you.
Well, you don't want to see me. Talk to my wife.
I was going
to
say, your wife is clearly your better half, man.
Yep. No, there's no doubt about that.
That is awesome. But thanks for hanging out for a few minutes.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
Shannon McClay is going to be on the show on Friday talking about her new financial gym. But let's talk to... We had to sit down with Shannon. Partially because Shannon was one of the first people to wear our t-shirts. This was neat. I walk into FinCon, right? I go to the hotel, I get my room, I get unpacked. Luckily, I haven't seen anybody because I'm just not, you know, I just got off a plane. In San Diego, the airport is right across the road from the Sheraton where we had our convention. And so I just got off a plane. I kind of got that jet laggy feeling. Don't really want to talk to anybody. Go to my room. But then I'm walking back in to meet up with Kathleen and start planning what we're going to do at the convention. Very first person I see, Philip Taylor from PT Money. We had him on the show. Griffin played an interview with him during our off week on Friday. But PT is wearing a Stacking Benjamins t-shirt.
That is so awesome.
And we didn't give him one. Like I didn't, I hadn't given him one. I said, I looked at him. And I could, very first person I see, Mr. FinCon himself, the guy putting on the whole thing with 1,200 people there, he's wearing one of our t-shirts. And I said, how did you get that? He goes, I went to your website and I bought it. These are cool t-shirts, man. Thanks, dude. It was so cool. So I took a selfie, and we'll show that on the show notes at stackingbenjamins.com. But anyway, we'd caught up with Shana McClay, who has a brand new financial gym. She got venture capital money for this, OG. So this is pretty exciting. Let's say hi to Shana. We'll hear more from her on Friday.
And Miss Martini's in her money. Joins us, Shana McClay.
Thank you. I couldn't even do the show without a drink in my hand. What does that say about me?
I don't know, but between the drink and the Stacky Benjamin's t-shirt, you are hot.
Hot, like temperature-wise. Right? So for your listeners who don't know, we're sitting out here at the lovely Rustic Root rooftop bar. Stacking Benjamin SoFi Party. Amazing party, by the way. I know everybody's going to wish you. They were here. And Joe is giving out Stacking Benjamin t-shirts, and I'm a big fan of the show, obviously, so I'm showing my support. I was not planning to wear it tonight, so it is currently over my planned outfit.
I couldn't believe it when you threw it on. I'm like, what are you doing?
I'm a fan.
It is very sexy.
It is very bulky, and the last thing I need to do is add bulk to my body.
She's like, let's finish this as soon as possible.
Yeah, it's getting warm.
How important is it for you to come to events like FinCon?
I think extremely important. I think, and we both know, building a business or building a brand is all about word of mouth, and there's no better words or mouths in the community than the financial services community. It's not even just for the bloggers and the podcasters, because they're huge, and some of my best friends have come from this event, but it's also the sponsors, like a SoFi, like Haven Life, whoever is here. I'm just looking around because they're standing right next to us.
Yes, they are.
And it's getting to interact with them because, you know, we all need the financial support to build our businesses.
Yeah, but also, it's a synergistic relationship, because I know on my end, if I didn't have sponsors that I believed in, I wouldn't want to have them on the show.
Okay, no comment. You have so many sponsors, Joe. How could you believe in that many people? No, in all seriousness, I know you do believe.
Yes.
You just believe in a lot of companies.
So let's get off that topic. Thank you, by the way. Glad you're here.
No, but we love SoFi. We love Magnify Money. Yes. They know that, though. They've heard it so much. Mm-hmm. Actually, I hear that a lot from your listeners in particular, because we have a lot of listeners in common. And they're like, oh, I've gone to SoFi. I go to Magnify Money because I've heard it from Joe for so long. So it is true. Like, you say it enough, but then you hear it enough, you know.
Well,
it works.
It does work, but it only works for me if they come back with good stuff. Because whenever, and there's been a few times where it just, like, somebody wrote that they had an appraiser from hell. And, you know, there's nothing SoFi can do about that, but it still, it looks bad on all of us. So.
Yeah.
All right, let's not talk about sponsors. Let's talk.
Because you're sponsors.
But let's get back to personal development, because I think when you were talking about an event like this being important, I also think if you work a 9-to-5 job, nobody cares about that job more than you, and finding that community is still important.
Yeah, I mean, community is everything, right? I think it's important to find a community. I think we're fortunate that we have this community. I think I was thinking about this earlier with some of my friends. We were talking about new podcasters coming in, because at the FinCon new people session or whatever they called it, the room was packed. And I was thinking, these people are really lucky that this community's here. You know, it's been, whatever, 5 or 6 years in the making. Because I know because we both have a lot of friends who were around and blogging pre-FinCon.
Right.
And how difficult it was to interact. I mean, you're only interacting online, and that's great. We all interact online, but there's just something different about interacting in person as well.
That's what Jordan Harbinger was here from Art of Charm, and I went to his session, and he said nothing beats face-to-face.
Yes, which is ironic, because we're all online people.
I know, isn't that funny? As we're sitting in a room together all texting. Hi, Shannon. Right? Isn't that great? So what's coming up on Martinis and Your Money? Then I'll let you go party.
Yes, Martinis and Your Money. We just recorded our happy hour session live at the FinCon recording booth. We had martinis there.
Yeah, you had great ones. I had one.
Yes, at noon.
Of course.
We were day drinking. And we got some great things coming up. We're talking about planning cheap weddings. We're talking about multi-level marketing.
Awesome.
Schemes. That actually was a listener request. I have, just like you do, a Facebook group, and I love hearing from my listeners in there what they want to hear, because that's like the whole reason why we do this.
Absolutely.
Other than enjoying
right.
what we're talking about. And I had a listener request that, and I was like, okay. And it ended up being a really good show.
It's
coming up. I was actually I was really happy with it. And I was like, I never would have thought about this if my listener didn't suggest it.
I think there's so much about multi-level marketing people don't know.
Oh, my God. It is like a can of worms. I mean, I was like, we both know I can gab, but like, I was shocked at how long the show went on. I was thinking this is going to be 15 minutes. I'd be like, thanks. Have a good day. And I kept going because I was like, there's a lot of levels, just the multi-levels of the multi-level marketing.
The show is Martinis and Your Money. Shannon, I will link to it in the show notes at stackingbenjamins.com.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Cheers.
For hanging out. Cheers. And next up at the Stacking Benjamin SoFi rooftop party at FinCon 2016, it's Jackie Lamb from Cheapsters. How are you?
I'm doing well. And yourself?
Really well. And what's funny is I should know you better than I do, because I just found out that SoFi and Magnify Money are my sponsors, and you write for...
I write for both SoFi and Magnify Money, which is a funny coincidence.
I know. They pay the bills for both of us.
Yes, and they're both great to write for, and I love what they're about. So.
Well, that's what I like. They're great organizations. But we're not here to talk about them, Jackie. We're here to talk about you.
Okay.
And you are, what's it called, Cheapsters.com?
Cheapsters.org, and it's a blog mainly for freelancers and artists. Help them with their money.
Awesome.
Yeah.
What do you find in that community? What are the biggest problems that you see?
The biggest problems, I think, is the relationship people have with their money.
Yeah.
Besides the obvious things such as having an irregular income, you know, having ups and downs with your money flow, and also...
It's because of the fact that you're a freelancer, so you don't know when the next paycheck's going to come in a lot of the time. Yeah.
Exactly, and it can be stressful and scary for many freelancers unless you have a game plan on a budget intact to help you through those ebbs and flows with your income. And I'm also helping with a lot with artists and helping them with their money. I actually have a couple of talks in the next year or so at co-working spaces and art galleries to address that. Because artists, as you know, first of all, oftentimes don't have money. And when they do, it can be kind of complicated, right? The whole conflict with selling out, making money off of your art.
Right. I didn't think about that.
Yeah.
I remember in the early days, because I've always been somebody that never had a guaranteed paycheck. And before I had a budget, it was like ramen noodles, and then bam, I get paid. Mm-hmm. And big steak dinner, big screen TV, and then oh crap. Right.
Right. Yes. Oh crap. Right. Because it's like you have that pent up energy and the aggression of wanting something.
Yes.
And not...
Yeah.
To buy it. Yeah.
Yeah. And then it just makes you horrible with money. So
right. What
do those people need? A bigger cash reserve, I suppose?
Yeah. I personally find that what works for me is having as much of a cash reserve as possible. So people say maybe 3 or 6 months. I say 6 to 12 if you can. And then having a buffer fund of a month, because a lot of freelancing gigs take 2 to 4 weeks sometimes.
Right.
And
yeah.
You have that month of a gap.
Right.
So that can be stressful unless you have that 1 month reserve.
And I guess credit card debt for those people could be much more of a problem than for somebody with a 9-to-5 too.
Yeah, definitely, because you don't know when the next paycheck is coming. You're oftentimes prone to being tempted to reach for the plastic and do that. So,
Jackie Lamb, Cheapsters.org, thanks for hanging out with us.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
And to round it out, it's a great discussion. Last person that we talked to, OG, the one and only Mr. Radical Personal Finance, Joshua Sheets. For those people that don't know Joshua, he thinks a lot about his podcast. Probably one of the few people that thinks long and hard about his podcast as much as we do. And he always decides to go really deep on stuff. We always decide to never, ever, ever go deep on anything. Never, ever,
deep.
Ever.
Yep.
Yeah. And it's funny how we both put in the same inputs. But whenever we get together with Joshua, it's always fun. So let's round out today's show on that.
And Joshua Sheets, is that how you pronounce that?
That's the way.
I don't know. Who are you? I know nothing about you.
Be careful. A couple of drinks and all of a sudden people start pronouncing my name differently.
Is it? Yeah. I could have. I didn't get that at first. It took me a second. I'm so glad you could come to our party. But how's life at Radical Personal Finance right now?
Man, busy. Busy and good. It's been awesome. I tell you, the show has continued to grow. But I tell you, it's also been a major challenge. The last year of my life, especially business-wise, has been so incredibly challenging for me. Primarily figuring out the business behind the show.
Yeah, right.
And I was just talking with somebody here at FinCon, and I was saying, in almost every other thing I've ever been in my life, the path was simple. if you wanted to do well in high school, you just study and take the test. If you want to do well in college or get your degree, here's the path.
Right.
When I was a financial planner, if you wanted to, just like you, when I was a financial advisor, if you wanted to do well, 40 dials a day. That was the rule, 40 dials every day.
12 appointments a week.
Right, right. Yes. How did you make it on 12 appointments a week?
We
went in with 25.
25? Did you really?
25 scheduled, 12 to 15 kept.
No.
We'd go in with 25 scheduled every week. That was the number
we'd
that we'd make.
Schedule 12, we'd have 6 to 8, show.
Okay.
Yeah. Holy cow.
I don't know how you did it.
Well, but that's interesting. But you worked for a firm, I think, that was really product-oriented, didn't you?
Yes. That's a loaded question based on how it was applied. So I worked with Northwestern Mutual, and we always started with insurance as the basis of financial planning.
Okay.
So definitely there was usually insurance sales at the beginning of it. But when I was there, and the big thing that matters in different offices is which office you're in. My office had a planning culture from the beginning. My boss was CFP, CLU, CHFC.
That was ours too. Everything revolved around the financial plan.
Right, right, right. And so that makes all the difference. So our entire office, yes, even though we were compensated on product, we did planning. We did planning. We were planners. And I find that it's the culture of the office that makes the difference.
I found for me, that's the piece that I kept, right?
Right.
The whole commission part that you and I had way back when.
Right.
Like I dumped that crap.
Right.
But still planning is super important. I mean, that's like in my blood.
Right. And it's everything. And to this day, it's always made it difficult for me to know how to navigate this world of finance, because I certainly can acknowledge the potential conflicts of interest that come with commissions. But I did so much planning in a commission world, it's easy for me to want to judge everything based upon my experience. But I know that my experience was not normal, so I get very conflicted when we start talking about financial advice.
That's when we have you on the long show again.
Exactly.
But let's talk briefly. You were on a panel here that a lot of our listeners will be interested in. Mm-hmm. It was about the early retirement movement.
Mm-hmm. Fire movement.
Yeah. So talk about that. What was that about?
I don't even remember, what was the title? It was all the questions about FIRE. So this concept of FIRE, financially independent, retire early, early retirement movement, has really been has had tremendous growth, especially in this online space. And it's got growth for really good reasons. It's sexy. It's kind of the sexy side. Instead of saying, oh, you have to be old and 65 and wrinkly to retire, it can be, wow, you can be 30 years old and you can retire before you have your first kid. That's the sex appeal of it that's sold. And it's true. There are ways to get there. But it's also an area that's fraught with a lot of strong opinions, a lot of problems, and so we had a panel where we tried to cover some of those. And
what are some of the big problems? Because, you know, when you see traditional financial planning doesn't include a lot of the stuff that these people are going for, what are some of the unique issues that they deal with?
I'll give you three. Number one, the biggest thing that I see is you want problems, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so the biggest problem I see is the lack of thinking about what's going to happen after you're financially independent. I've interviewed lots of people who've attained early retirement, early financial independence at a young age. And I always, one of the questions I ask them and that they share with me is they thought it was going to be better than it was.
Right.
And the way that I phrase it is that financial independence is a terrible goal if it's an end goal in and of itself. It's a great goal if it's a means to an end.
Right.
So what are you going to do when you're financially independent? Because it's not going to be, you're going to wake up on Monday morning and you're going to be the same person that you were the week before when you weren't financially independent as you are after. So people need to spend a lot of time thinking about financial independence and what's going to be beyond. And
that's so important, by the way. And people, literally, I mean, that was the depression people have right after they, quote, retire.
Right, right.
Is a huge problem.
Right.
My dad went through it, and I'm a financial planner.
Right.
And it was amazing. My dad went from really vibrant and healthy to just looked awful, started having health problems. It was such a physical change.
Right.
And then he found himself.
Right.
And that was huge.
Right. You just told, so the benefit that I bring to the world of to the panel is I come from, like you, from the world of professional financial planning. And I just said to the people, listen, look at the world of retirement planning. We need to study the traditional retirement literature, because the literature very much bears out what you said as normal. So you've got to look beyond the first up goal of financial independence and recognize that there's got to be something attractive beyond.
Yeah. What are the other issues?
I would say number two is people often underestimate what they're actually going to get to down the road. So especially with younger people, they look at it and say, well, I'm living on $2,000 a month because the path to early retirement is usually this aggressive savings, this extreme savings path, which works great. But they're living on $2,000 a month, and they often have this idea, well, I'm always going to want to live on $2,000 a month, or I'm always going to be able to live on $2,000 a month. And you laugh, But there's a balance here, okay?
Right.
Because the people who are doing this have consistently lived on this small amount of money for a very long time. So they're not deluding themselves into thinking that somehow they're going to magically start living on less in the future. But they often forget about some of the pleasure that spending more money can be. Taking all your kids and grandkids on a cruise just because, or buying a fancy ski vacation to Whistler just because. So I like to caution people for that.
I love that. And what's the last one?
The last one, I forgot the last one.
No, you know what? No, I'll tell you one that I think that, because people, because when I talk to people that are very aggressive fire movement people, inflation is a bigger bitch than they think it's going to be.
Right.
It is a much, much bigger bitch than they think it's going to be.
Yeah. And I'll give the last one that I would just say is people often forget that they can do something faster than waiting until they're financially independent as measured by the amount of money their portfolio can throw off. I mean, the example, I wear it out. It's like you can wait until you're rich and retired to go and fish every day, or you can go get a job as a fishing guide. One's going to take you a couple decades or a decade. One's going to be pretty quick. So what I encourage people is to approach it in stages and start with, you know, getting there with a job or a business or something that's going to be closer to you. I mean, look at you, Mr. Fancy Pants retired, but you're running a business. But you didn't have to be Mr. Fancy Pants retired to run the business. You could have figured out, done like me, and quit early and got it done.
Joshua Sheets, Radical Personal Finance. We never get to hang out enough, man. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for doing this, man.
That's going to do that. That's our potpourri episode from FinCon. It was a lot of fun.
The old potpourri episode.
Dude, I hope you get to make it next year.
Well, me too. I need to do it at a different time of year.
Yeah, that's right. Got to say a big thanks to everybody once again. Show notes are going to be huge for this episode. So if you like any of the people that were on the show, be sure to hit up our show notes at stackybenjamins.com, and we'll have links to everybody that was on. And of course, we've got lots of great fintech coming up on the show over the next several weeks through December. In fact, we have the rest of the year booked up with some of the fintech competitors and some other cool companies, none of which we endorse, but all of which I think show that there's lots of stuff moving in the space. So, gee, lots of moving parts.
Cool.
Yep. So thanks to you for hanging out, man. We'll see everybody back here on Wednesday. Jeffrey Kleintop, Chief Global Strategist at this little company called Charles Schwab, is going to join us on Wednesday. Maybe your portfolio, OG, isn't as diversified as you think it is. And I know you've told that to people before. So that's going to be a fun interview, I'm sure, with Jeffrey Kleintop on Dad Shortwave. See everybody back there on Wednesday or tomorrow over at the Green Room podcast. That's a separate feed, but catch us over there. We'll see everybody back here, though, stacking more Benjamins. I get to do the lesson today. Oh, this is awesome. I love it when Doug's not here. So the lesson today, first, if you have student loans, it's important to look and see if you qualify for any special repayment programs. Maybe there's an easier way to attack that debt. Speaking of debt, Grayson Bell made a great point. I think maybe the jet skis aren't worth the interest payments it takes to keep up with the Joneses. But the big lesson, I love going to rooftop parties without inviting Mr. Announcer Dude. It's so great to take over this part of the show. Special thanks to lots of people for appearing on today's show. I could give you all of them, but instead, let's make this about 10 minutes shorter by sending you to our show notes at stackybenjamins.com. You'll find links to all of our special FinCon guests there. Oh, Doug, glad you finally made it. Why don't you finish from here?
This show is the property of SB Podcasts, LLC. The show is created by Joe Saul Sehi, produced by Richie Rutter Reese, and engineered by the amazing Steve Stewart. SB Podcasts may receive payment on the show from sponsors and guests in the form of books, giveaway items, discounts, or other remuneration. There's no way you would take advice from these dorks, but like Joe's mom always says, don't take advice from people you don't know. This show is for entertainment purposes only, and before making any financial moves, consult with a real financial advisor.
very, very short after show. Just got to tell you this story. So I'm sitting there and I'm picking stuff up after this. I don't think I ever told you this. I'm picking stuff up and the party just kind of disbanded. They had last call. And then SoFi bought another round, last call. Thank you to SoFi for everyone. So we had two last calls. But then I'm picking stuff up. Most people have left. They've gone on to other events. And I'm sitting there by myself. Actually, I have Cindy from Kavout. She'll be on shortly. They won the fintech competition. She's kind of just sitting with me, but working on her phone. And this guy comes up and goes, Joe, shakes my hand and goes, hey, I'm Joe. And I'm like, oh, great name, man. I said, so did you enjoy the party? I thought we had so many people at the party. I thought he was the guy at the party. And he goes, party? I said, yeah. So FinCon, well, what do you do at FinCon? He goes, oh, I'm not at FinCon. I live here. You said you were doing a party at a rooftop bar in the Gas Lamp Quarter. I figured it was here. So I came to see if this was the place. And it was. And you're here.
So you have a fan. You found him.
It was so awesome. So Joe and I sat and had a beer. Joe actually has a radio show in San Diego. And cool. I will be a guest on Joe's radio show in San Diego. If I knew the name, I would say it right here. But I don't know the name. So we'll have to come back to that. But that was pretty cool. That was that
You're
was
a
awesome.
Celebrity.
He said, I think I'm kind of stalking you. Luckily, I had a T-shirt left. So Joe went home with a T-shirt, which was cool. But anyway, very, very short. Story, because I know you've got to go, but I thought that was funny. I'm like, who?
You're a popular young man, sir.
All right, we'll see everybody next time.